Well, it has been a big week, a massive week in politics, with New Zealand welcoming a new Prime Minister. It's hard to believe, just a week. Chris Hipkins and celebrations, of course, at Ngātahuna kicking off the political year. To go through the developments, we're joined by our political editor, Jane Patterson, and our deputy political editor, Craig McCulloch. Kia ora, welcome to you both.
Morena.
You're still standing, you're still with us after a crazy old week. Jane, let's kick it off with you first. When we think about handovers of Prime Ministers in the past and how this one has gone, your assessment, it has been remarkably smooth.
It has been very, very smooth and very quick, and I think there were some motivating factors for Labour MPs and those senior people. One was that you take the vote with your caucus and you get the 100% say as a caucus. The second one is going out on those Labour Party roadshow, leadership roadshows. Corin and Guyon, I don't know if you covered those, but they're long, drawn-out, difficult events.
And well, that's when we had all the Davids, was it?
That was all the Davids.
Yeah, that was before we had the Battle of the Chrises. We had the Battle of the Davids.
I think there were three at one stage.
Shearer, yeah. Cunliffe and Parker.
That's right. So there were four of those former leadership contenders in the Labour Party caucus at the moment, and I heard that they were front of the queue for pushing for a quick result. But look, they needed to do it quickly once Grant Robertson ruled himself out.
What do you guys make of this? Matthew Hooton's got a column today, publicised that too much in a rival publication, but he's an interesting theory. He reckons that they cooked it up before Christmas, that Hipkins and Ardern cooked it up before Christmas. Do you reckon that that's a credible theory?
Chris Hipkins has already acknowledged that he got a heads up about a week before the announcement, and that he also has said he knew that Ardern was considering the idea over the Christmas break. So I don't think it's too far of a stretch to go to where Matthew Hooton is talking about, which is that there has been discussions going on. Grant Robertson and Jacinda Ardern certainly have been in discussions right throughout summer about the handling of this, which I think goes some way to explaining why there has been such a smooth transition. Chris Hipkins has had a bit of time to mentally prepare himself. I've actually been more impressed at how quickly the caucus has been able to pull themselves together here, considering that they wouldn't have been in the loop. A week ago, they were shell-shocked. They'd lost their leader. And yet, a week on, they seem to have found their feet. They seem chipper again. They seem fairly invigorated.
But that's the point that I think Hooton's making, though, is that they had no time to do that. They were sort of presented with this scenario. Did they have any other time to think anything else?
But also, I suppose the other factor is, who are the other contenders? So we're not really in a situation where you had a strong field, for example, of three or four people who were really credible people, and then you have the factions behind them, and then you have to start going into the negotiations. So I think that probably helped them in a way. Mm. You had Michael Wood in the mix, but really I don't think he was ever going to be a big challenge to Chris Hipkins. So I think that was another factor of it. But handled very, very quickly. So they managed one risk. The risk now, I suppose, is whether the public warms to Chris Hipkins, whether now that he's in place, there will be enough of a separation from Jacinda Ardern for some people who have been put off by the government, put off by the style, to come back.
Mm. He's going to have to go big then, isn't he, on the reshuffle and on the policy reset to capture the attention of those who are prepared to give Labour another look with a new leader.
Yes, he is, because otherwise you just have a change in personnel and very little changes. So I imagine that this policy reset will be absolutely taken as an opportunity to do that, to maybe push further than Jacinda Ardern was planning to do. And even look at his first outing was to business. So not to traditional Labour constituencies, but people who have been pretty discontented with Labour, going straight to them, straight to the senior Auckland business people.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because Jacinda Ardern had signalled all of this last year. She said that she was going to have a reshuffle. She said that there was going to be a policy reset. So how much actually in substance is this going to be different from what she had intended anyway? Or is it just about style? I mean, the policies we're talking about in the reset are the same ones we were talking about last year. It's the RNZ-TVNZ merger. It's the unemployment insurance scheme. These are the same policies that Jacinda Ardern will
maybe,
well,
that's the point, maybe isn't at the border, like, though. Sorry, Guyon.
No. You know,
immigration, I think that's somewhere where Hipkins will push further, and that could alleviate a lot of that discontent with business. There's only one message coming through from there, and that's one area, for example. Tax is another one that he was not ruling out tax changes going into next election. We could see like an income threshold, something like that. So I do think there are areas that he can differentiate himself, but again, it comes back to whether he is presented to the public as credible, whether they can trust him, whether they like him.
It's interesting you touch on some of those attacks and other ideas. I mean, it wouldn't seem enough just to cancel stuff, would it? I mean, okay, you can cancel the RNZ TVNZ merger or the insurance scheme, or you could even, you know, downgrade Three Waters or whatever you want to do, but cancelling stuff rather than coming up with anything new for the public wouldn't seem to be enough, would it?
Well, also, where's the support for New Zealanders? I mean, that's the message too. We're going to make your life financially easier. So, yes, you do that at the macro level and you cancel some of those projects, and that gives you presumably a bit more room. But, you know, we had those big universal payments last year, for example. They are not long term. They are not fundamental changes to the system, to the economic system. So there has to be something going back the other way
as well. But it's tricky though, right? Because he has to do that while also not making inflation work, not worse, not making it more stimulatory. Like the options there, and he doesn't have a huge number of options available to him. Tax changes, perhaps, maybe some form of indexation like what National has proposed, but it's a bit difficult when they've been hammering that proposal from National for so long. And then we do know that the government is or has been reviewing Working for Families. So how bold do they want to be there? There is room there potentially for something of a shake-up, some more targeted support for families. He does, Guy, and I agree, need something, an election winner. I guarantee you they are working overtime to dream one up already if they don't have one.
Jane, the opposition and how National responds to that, I mean, the danger for them is that they just don't get any oxygen at the moment. They're being pushed out of the limelight constantly because of the next announcement, the next thing, Waitangi, the next thing.
That's right, and we are going into these big events where actually Chris Hipkins has the advantage of being seen as a Prime Minister. So we have Ratana and then we have Waitangi. So you kind of have the mantle of leadership given to him in a political and publicity kind of way at those events. Chris Luxon, I imagine, will just carry on, but they do have to keep that scrutiny on. I think they just need to keep playing the game, but he may come under pressure one-on-one with Chris Hipkins too. Christopher Luxon tends to struggle once he's pushed past his lines, once he's past the content and, you know, things that he's comfortable with. When he's pushed past that by either media or opposition, that's where he tends to struggle. And I expect Chris Hipkins to be a lot more direct, a lot more assertive and aggressive, for example, in question time, and maybe putting actually some pressure back on Christopher Luxon, who had a pretty good run at the end of last year because the government was so worried about what they were doing. National was able to, you know, score some good runs just by good, consistent, scrutinising performance.
Final question, Craig, around the issue of co-governance, and Christopher Luxon did talk about this quite a bit this week too. How tricky is that going to be for the new Prime Minister, given the Māori caucus, given any changes there, any slowdown in the momentum around that? Is that likely to be an area of trouble?
Yes. We spoke a bit about this earlier in the week. Chris Hipkins has his work cut out from here. The government has done a poor job thus far of explaining to New Zealanders what they are talking about when they talk about co-governance. He is right here. He's basically acknowledged that he's when he says that it's almost a meaningless term now, it has become that. It is almost a bogeyman. He will have to spell out very clearly from now on what he intends in every situation and why it is the right path forward. National has seen an opportunity here, so does ACT. They know the government is vulnerable in this area, so they will have to be careful too. Actually, I thought Guyon's interview with Christopher Luxon this week was interesting. You pointed out, Guyon, there is an inconsistency there with National on Māori seats. So National has to be a little bit careful in this area too. On the one hand, National wants to stand in the Māori seats. On the other hand, they don't think they should exist. So this whole area of co-governance and Māori rights and race relations, I suspect it will play a big part in this election.
It's interesting. We haven't heard a lot of anything from the Māori caucus, have we? Well, I haven't. I'm just wondering where they will be playing their hand. Obviously, a strong strand of Labour. Have there been some behind-the-scenes stuff there that I haven't been picking up on?
Look, not that's been really obvious. The focus has really been on this changeover. I think in terms of the Māori caucus, they have had Calvin Davis retained in that deputy leader role in terms of, I suppose, their position within that caucus. In terms of co-governance, I imagine that they too have accepted that actually there's more of a discussion that's needed, and that was, you know, Willie Jackson talked about, he referred to that at the end of last year, that maybe the work had got ahead of the public communication and public conversation, which wasn't helpful. Chris Hipkins, I think, will tone it down and try to move back from that position, and probably helped by the fact that Willie Jackson has parked that work ahead of this year, an election year. But as Craig said, I think the issue itself, there's still going to be a lot of discussion and vulnerabilities for many parties in that area as well.
Jane Patterson, RNZ political editor, thank you very much for your time. Also speaking there to Craig McCulloch, the deputy political editor at RNZ.